I'm done. I don't.
He already knows all the answers.
It's always tough to you know, do a pre interview and not talk about things that, oh, we want to talk about you in the interview, but we'll cover a lot of the same ground before. So.
Yep. I can turn that off.
You think we may need also? All right. Let me first of all, it'll just start with the official part, and let me get your name on the tape so we know who we're talking to.
My name is James Stallmeyer. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Covington, Kentucky, across the river from Cincinnati, which will help people locate it. And I came here in July of 1944, and except for a three-month interlude, I've been here ever since.
Let's start. We talked a little earlier about your time in high school, and during high school, it was the time when the war began, I take it, or maybe
my oldest brother was drafted in early 1941. The second one was drafted in 42, and the third one was also drafted in 42.
So obviously, you were probably thinking as a high school student, you know, what happens to you at that time?
Well, I was going to be 18 in August of 1944. And I knew that I would be in the service. I would get my orders during that summer, as several of my classmates did. So in the spring of 1944, I decided to enlist in the Navy. And since I was at that time in the engineering curriculum at the University of Dayton, the Navy had me take an examination. And when I got my orders, I was ordered to report to the Navy unit at the University of Illinois. That's the total of the description which I received.
You mentioned that you were able to take an examination. This was an elective. This is something you could have done, what would you have done otherwise?
If I hadn't taken the exam, I would have gone wherever the Navy sent me. Just as any enlisted person did. I mean, the exam was not a guarantee that I would go to the college program. It was, as a matter of fact, I took the exam and I enlisted in the Navy. Then I waited and they said, you'll get your orders. And so my orders came and told me to go to Urbana, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. What did you think at that time when you got your orders? And what had you known of Urbana-Champaign before that?
I knew nothing of Urbana-Champaign. I didn't know of the University of Illinois. And so I got on the train in Cincinnati at about 11 p.m. on June the 30th, traveled to Indianapolis, made a change in train, arrived in Urbana at what is now the Station Theater at about 8:15 on the morning of July the 1st, and asked a taxi driver to take me to the Navy unit at the University of Illinois, which he didn't know the location of, and so he took me to the administration building on Wright Street, which is where I was dropped. July the 1st, 1944, happened to be a Sunday, so that there were no offices open and few people around at 8:15 in the morning on Sunday. So I started to roam around the campus and onto the quad until I ran into a Navy person who told me to go to Busey Hall, which traditionally had been a girls' residence hall, but at that time was occupied by the Navy unit, Busey and Evans.
So you got to Busey, and What was the situation there? Was it pretty much a barracks at that time? How were the living arrangements?
We lived in the rooms I won't say the same as they are today, since they've both been redecorated, but we lived in the regular residence rooms with a community bathroom. I lived on the east wing of Busey, which had about 9 rooms, so there were 18 of us. There were 20 of us, because the end room had 2 double bunks, The four rooms on each side had double bunk, so were four rooms of two on each side and a room with four at the far end, and one bathroom, and that's where we lived. And we had meals in the basement of Evans Hall, which I believe is still used as the eating, the dining room for the residents of Busey Evans today.
And these were all young men who were in the same situation as you, who had taken the exam? And
all Navy, they were all Navy, yes, all young men from the Navy. Some, like I, this was where they were sent first. People who were in the fleet at that time were eligible to take an exam to see whether they could get into the program, so there were people in the unit who had come from the fleet. So it was a kind of a mixture of sailors and civilians in Navy uniform.
So that must have been interesting. I mean, as a college student, obviously you went to college and you interacted with people who came from different backgrounds, but this was probably something altogether different.
Well, it was a unique arrangement because we had regular Navy activities. I mean, we had calisthenics, which we had to do, and we had to have marching, and we had to take courses in all the Navy programs, learn all the semaphore signals and everything else, in addition to taking our engineering classes.
So was basic training, your basic training in the Navy was held here as well?
Oh, yes. We marched behind Busey Evans. At that time, it was a big open field except for Freer Gym. The present athletic facility, which is east of Freer Gym, was not there. It was a big open field, and that's where we marched and ran. And we used Freer Gym as our gym and did rope climbing, and we had swimming in the Huff Gym. In the old pool, I don't know whether it's, I suppose it's still there, the pool, which is 7 feet deep, so you couldn't touch bottom, and that's where we had all of our swimming lessons.
So you learn Navy life hundreds of miles away from the nearest body of water.
Right. As I tell all of my relatives, I was a dry land sailor.
Tell me, we talked about this, but you know, what was a day in the life on campus like at that time?
Well, for us, it was pretty much dictated. We rose at 6. Reveille was at 6 a.m. We had to assemble for calisthenics, which went until about 6:30. Exercises, running. At 6:30, we were dismissed from that to do whatever we had to do, clean up and have breakfast, and then we assembled at 7:30 for what at that time was called muster, essentially roll call to make sure everybody was there. And then after roll call, we were dismissed to go to our classes and follow our regular academic program. And at that time, we were required by the Navy to take a minimum of 18 credit hours, which meant that we were in class 26 to 28 hours a week. Classes ran from 7 in the morning until 5 in the evening, Monday through Friday, and 7 to noon on Saturday. After classes, we had dinner. The evenings were athletic activities or study, as you wished. TAPS was at 10 p.m., and the corpsman would come through the halls to make sure everybody was in bed with the lights out. And so that was the end of the day. So our day ran from 6 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night with classes and study, and that was pretty much it.
How much different is that from what a civilian may have been going through at school at that time, you think?
Well, civilian could take whatever program he wanted. Of course, there weren't many civilians in the engineering program, so we didn't run into the classes were for the most part, all Navy personnel, maybe one or two civilians, but they lived in their quarters, and we were isolated in Busey Evans, and so most of our friends were Navy personnel.
But you took some courses that were, you mentioned it was the general college curriculum, so you took a lot of other courses.
We took the regular engineering program, English, history, economics, of course, chemistry, physics, that's all part of engineering. But we had the regular program. The program was, the academic program was not dictated by the Navy. It was simply that we went through the program, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, ceramic engineering, whatever engineering discipline you happen to be in.
And what were you in?
I was in civil engineering. And so that's where I spent my time. Civil engineering at that time, all the classes were in the old engineering hall, directly across from the Union Building.
And how might that, that training have been different from a, what training a civil engineer would go through in civilian times? What kinds of, was there specific military civil engineering
training? No. It was the regular standard academic program. Mm-hmm. There were no special courses because they were the Navy program.
How much interaction did you have, taking some of those general college courses along with the engineering, how much interaction did you have with other students?
None. My economics class was all Navy personnel. All of the classes were Navy personnel. I don't know that the civilians were exempted from our sections, but we never had any with us for whatever reason.
Did you interact out of class at all?
Very rarely, because there wasn't much time. A few of the Navy men found local girls, but not very many for the most part. It was pretty much an isolated program.
When was there a chance for interaction at all? You mean passing between buildings during the day or social activities or anything like that?
There weren't many social activities during the 1944 to 46, during that period. None that I don't recall any sponsored dances or anything of that sort.
What did you and your colleagues do on weekends?
Played football in the wintertime, played baseball in the summertime, played basketball. When I first came here, there had been a Signal Corps group, which was quartered in what is Kenny Gym. There was a Diesel School, which was quartered in what at that time was known as the Men's Residence Hall, directly west of Huff Gym. And we were in Busey Evans. The Signal School had been disbanded. The Diesel School was still here. So we were quartered in Busey and Evans. When the Diesel School was disbanded, then we were moved from Busey Evans to the men's residence halls across from Huff Gym. And that's it. What was your question?
Social activities. What things you did over the weekend, considering you had to stay?
We had to stay within the confines of Champaign, Urbana, which pretty much restricted our activity. Some people have asked me whether we went to Rantoul, and I said, no, most of the people who were at Chanute came to Champaign, Urbana, because during the war years, there were probably twice as many girls on campus as there were men, and therefore there was no reason for the men from Champaign-Urbana to go to Rantoul. It was rather the other way around, that the airmen from Chanute came to Champaign-Urbana because they knew that there were a lot of available girls.
Still, there wasn't too much interaction.
So there was very, very little interaction. We had few civilians in our classes. Our regimen was pretty much dictated by the Navy. I mean, when you had 28 hours of classes during essentially a 44-hour week, there was not a lot of downtime. And when the lights went out at 10 o'clock, there was not a lot of time for social activity.
It made for a pretty serious campus, I would bet.
It was a very serious campus, I would say, much different than today, because you knew that at 10 o'clock the lights were going to go out and you had to be in bed or you were going to be in trouble. Consequently, 3 hours during the day were, you had to use those for studying when you were taking 18 hours. So if you had a free hour from classes, you didn't do a lot of socializing. You mostly went to the library and did more studying.
Was that because of the era, perhaps, or is it just because what kind of discipline was there as far as?
Well, the discipline was that if you did not satisfy the program, there was no such thing, at least within the Navy program, there was no such thing as probation as we have it today, so that if you don't make your grades, you get another semester's grace to try to bring them up to par. If you didn't make the grade, you went to the fleet. So people have said, well, you weren't really in the Navy. Well, I was in the Navy. I went where they told me to go, and I did what they told me to do, and if I hadn't been able to satisfy the program, I would have ended up someplace else in the fleet. And that was entirely up to the Navy to make that decision.
And by in the fleet, you mean on a ship or?
On a ship or at some other Navy base, Norfolk, San Diego, San Francisco, wherever they had a Great Lakes, where they had a big Navy program.
Or possibly seeing action.
Because I had classmates, high school classmates, who did see action in the Pacific War in the Navy, who were drafted into the Navy after I enlisted.
What was it like knowing that while you're taking courses that there were, that there was the possibility that you or some of your colleagues could see action eventually?
It was taken for granted. It was never a big worry. You just did what you had to do and let the chips fall where they may. So there was no anxiety. It was just going to class and doing your best, and that was it.
We talk about the physical setup of the campus at that time. Even physically, I guess your groups were separated. There wasn't interaction between civilians and
very military. Very little. No, it was pretty much traveling between the residence hall and the campus, and that was pretty much it.
Tell me a little about some of your colleagues, and you mentioned all coming from different backgrounds and some from the fleet.
Well, very good friend. The first unit that I was in, the first company that I was in, we had a local boy. He was actually from Champaign-Urbana, who had been in the fleet and had been to sea and took the exam, and he was back in our group. There were three men from New York. My roommate was from Ely, Minnesota. Several people from Alabama. It was a mixed bag.
Did you hear of some of the previous experiences that some of the people that were in the fleet had?
No, they never talked. Nobody talked much about it. It was you didn't talk about past history. At that time, it was pretty much to do what you had to do, and that was it.
Did you know what kinds of things you might have been doing, once leaving the school when you were taking civil engineering? Was it just sort of?
Well, the program that we were in, the civil engineer the civil engineering program was directed to produce engineers for what was called the Civil Engineering Corps, the Seabees, which was the construction arm of the Navy. Those were the people who predominantly ended up in the Pacific building airfields on the islands that the Marines and the Army freed up, and then they would go in and build barracks and airfield for the Navy, for the Air Force. So the objective for me was to get into the Civil Engineer Corps.
Were there typical were there classes of people who would leave all at once, or were did people get individually called in?
Oh no! As you graduated, you went to the fleet. The program that I was in, called the V-12, the engineering program, was initiated in 43. People who came into the program, some graduated in 44. And then they went to the fleet and went wherever the Navy sent them. Some graduated in 45 and did the same thing. The program was disbanded in the summer of 1946, and we were all discharged at the convenience of the government. And my Navy career ended.
Very quickly, I guess.
Very quickly.
What was that like? What did they just hand you a piece of paper? How did all that work? I mean, between the end of the war, when you knew that things would wind down.
We went by truck from the men's residence halls to the railroad station, and we went by train from there to Great Lakes. And for some reason, we had to go to Great Lakes to be discharged. And we were discharged from the Great Lakes Naval Station, and then we were just told to go our own way. So after discharge, I went to downtown Chicago and caught a train and went back to Cincinnati, back to civilian life.
Did you have an idea what you would do or how much longer you would be in the service once the war ended? Did you give any thought to what civilian life would lead for you then?
No. I guess as far as I was concerned, I was in the Navy and I did what the Navy told me to do, and they just told me to stay here and go to school. And finally, when the program was disbanded, they said, "You're being discharged," and that was it.
You talked earlier about the Army school being on campus at the same time and not knowing too much about that school.
No, there was a program called ASTP, right. Army Specialized Training Program. They were housed in Newman Hall, which is on Armory Avenue, by the library. They did their thing, and we did our thing. There were no Army people in our classes. I have no idea what the Army program was for. All I know is they were here, and that program was disbanded in 1945 when the war in Europe ended, and they all departed.
Was there any rivalry, Army-Navy rivalry on campus at all?
No, and no, very, very little interaction. I didn't know any ASTP, Ben.
But you also mentioned that the Navy pretty much kept up the traditions of at college football games.
Well, yeah, there were not many musicians, I suppose, on campus, so the Navy made up the band for the football team. When I say they made up the band, at 168 people, there were perhaps 40 instruments, and the other 128 were marchers. And the Navy personnel constituted the band and made all of the formations for the football games. And on at least one year, Chief Illini Weck was a member of the Navy unit. And several members of the football team were Navy men, and several Navy men were also part of the basketball teams during those years.
It must have been a different atmosphere at those games in wartime than there would have been any other time.
Well, there weren't many people there, maybe 25, 30,000. The stands were pretty sparse. But it was still fun. We didn't win many games because many of the football players who had been on the football team here, when they got into the service for one reason or another, many of them ended up at Purdue. And when Purdue came over here to play, we were essentially playing against our own personnel who were now students at Purdue.
And that changed again. You said some of them
that changed again when the war ended. They came back specifically. I don't remember all of their names. I remember specifically Alex Agassi, who had been here before the war, went to Purdue, played at Purdue, and then came back after the war and played here. Eventually ended up as the coach at Northwestern. But he was one of those.
You were talking about the atmosphere on campus when you were there, and I think you said there were about 14,000
students? About 14,000.
What had changed in the time between when you left to get discharged and when you came back to campus and started as a civilian student?
Well, the veterans started to come back in 1945, when after the war in Europe ended. By 1946, there were many veterans on campus. Kenny Gym was a residence hall. The gym was a series of bunk beds. Where they studied, I know not. The ice rink was another dormitory. The ice rink itself was, the floor was covered with bunk beds, doubles or triples. And the rest of the veterans lived wherever they could. Anybody who had space rented out rooms, including their basements. And west of the stadium, since there was nothing between the stadium and the railroad tracks, from First Street to the railroad tracks and from Peabody to Gregory were prefabs where the married veterans resided in Illini Village.
So could you tell the difference? Was there a noticeable difference in just the feeling on campus before and after?
Well, it was a difference in the feeling. No, because when I came back in 46, I was still only 19 years old. The returning veterans were, and I was single, the returning veterans were 24 or 25, and they were married. And so they had their own responsibilities. And let's put it, it's a little more serious, I would say. When the veterans started to return, it was still a very serious campus because they had time to make up and they were not about to participate in any social activities, I mean, except among the married families who lived all in a neighborhood. There was very little interaction between the married veterans and the single veterans. And so it was a much different atmosphere than it is today.
How was the transition from military life on campus to civilian life on campus?
Well, you didn't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and you didn't go to bed at 10 o'clock in the evening. That was probably the biggest change for me.
You felt a little freer, or what?
Certainly, absolutely. Although I did continue in the Navy program in my senior year in the Naval ROTC, and when I graduated in 1947, I was commissioned in the Navy in the Civil Engineer Corps, so that I was still subject to being called back for many years.
So the military still had a big presence on campus well afterwards.
Oh yes, oh yes. The Navy program was here. As a matter of fact, the Army, obviously, the ROTC program goes back to I know not when the Army program started, but there was always an ROTC program on campus. But there had never been a Navy ROTC. The Navy ROTC unit on our campus started in 1946 with the dismissal of the V-12 program. And so a number of us, those who came back, a majority of us continued in the NROTC and got our commissions in 1947. And then we were essentially eligible as veterans to be recalled whenever the Navy needed us.
Okay, just a second.
That's okay. In addition to learning how to swim, you had to learn how to survive. I don't know how tall the tower was, 15 feet. You had to jump off with all your clothes on and take your pants off and tie knots in the legs and throw them back over your head and try to make an air pocket so you could use it as a life jacket. You had to practice swimming under oily water that might be on fire, so you had underwater back and forth. You were permitted, you were supposed to come up twice in 25 yards, so you would swim 25 feet and come up and take a breath and swim 25 feet underwater and come up and keep doing that for 30 minutes. Or you had your hands tied behind your back and jumped into the pool and you had to survive and stay above water because you couldn't touch bottom for 30 minutes until you were told you could be allowed to touch the side of the pool. And so you learned all the same things. You just didn't do it. You didn't do it in the ocean or in the lake.
You did it all in that 7-foot pool at Huff
Hall. You did it all in the Huff Gym pool.
What other kinds of training maneuvers did you do on campus, and where were they done? And did you go off campus for any of those types
of
things?
No, we never went off campus. We had drill and calisthenics, and we had rope climbing, which we did in Freer, because I don't know what Freer gym is like now, but at that time it had an open floor and about a 25-foot ceiling, and the rope was hung from the rafters, and you did rope climbing up and down. So that was about it.
So the basic training that you would have gotten elsewhere was all done here on campus.
Was all done on campus, yes.
And with the facilities you had and not with an ocean.
And in addition to the engineering courses, we had Navy courses. We had to learn semaphore. We had to learn all the ship directions and all that good stuff, you know, where the red light was and where the green light was and what the flags meant and all the semaphore signals. Yeah, we did that all on campus.
A lot of people were from outside the Midwest, correct?
Oh yeah, we had people from the East Coast to the West Coast, and I had classmates from California, and they went from the Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico. They were from all over the country.
And they all had to get used to Illinois winters and learning naval exercises
and a swimming pool
and all that. Yeah.
Well, it was different. I can tell you, coming from Kentucky, I couldn't believe it when I got to Illinois and realized that, you know, in Kentucky, if you can see 300 feet over the hill, why, you're lucky. But when I came to Illinois and saw that you could see for 10 miles with, you know, without anything in the way, it's quite a transition. I recall the first time a friend lent me his car in 1945 when I had leave and I drove to Cincinnati, and at that time I used to go down to Route 36, which goes through Tuscola on its way to Indianapolis, and of course it's straight as a string, and you can put the pedal to the metal, and at that time the speed limit was reasonable and proper, which meant that you could do whatever you could go as fast as you wanted to go, as long as it wasn't improper.
what did you get to know about Champaign-Urbana, for example, outside campus? What was?
Not much, not much. Champaign-Urbana didn't mean a whole lot to me at that time.
So there wasn't, you mentioned, not much interaction among students, but any interaction inside town or anything?
No,
like that.
No, not at all. None at all.
Go to the theaters at all? Or
went to the Virginia and to the Rialto, which used to be on Church Street in where Robeson's department store used to be. I forget what they call it now, but there was a theater there called the Rialto. The one in Urbana was called the Princess on Main Street. Yeah, we went to the theater lots of times.
And you, I mean, saw civilians there, saw residents, townies, I guess.
We saw townies, but I don't know. At least I never got acquainted with any townies because they didn't come to the campus unless they were students, and we didn't roam about town because we didn't have all that much free time.
You did mention you were supposed to stay in the Champaign-Urbana area, but there were times when the rules were bent.
We were confined to the Champaign-Urbana area unless we had papers to leave. However, I mentioned that there was a man in our unit who was from Champaign-Urbana, and several of the people got to know young ladies from Champaign-Urbana whose parents had automobiles. So it was possible to go off limits, provided you didn't get caught, which was not likely because there were no MPs roaming around Illinois looking for Navy personnel. So on occasion, we would go over to the strip mines on the south side of Route 150. On the north side, it's now called Kickapoo, but on the south side, we called it Kickapoo, but it's all strip mines, and we slide down the cliff and go swimming in the strip mines and go over to the Boy Scout camp, which is still there, then back and forth through the strip mines till we got to the Boy Scout camp and then use their diving board. And then when we got tired, we'd swim back to the cliff and go back up and get in the car and come back home.
That was a big outing. That was the extent of mischief, too.
That was the extent of mischief.
You were... Okay, I thought you mentioned it. Ah, okay. Did you meet your wife here?
I met my wife here, but not until 1952.
Oh, okay.
That was not during the war. I met her in 52, and we were married in 53.
Mm-hmm. So. But you had been here, I mean, after you came back to campus, you never left, I guess, right?
The only time I left was when I graduated in 47 and took a job with the Southern Railway, who sent me to Tennessee on a construction job. But then I got notice that I had an appointment to go to graduate school, and I came back in September and started graduate school in September of 1947, and have been here ever since.
And even when you came back, it was a different school, different character than when you left?
Oh, yeah, because by that time, we were all civilians. There were no military people on the campus after that. And so now we were free to live wherever we wanted and make our own schedule for whatever we wanted to do.
Do you think somebody who went to school now or went to school in the recent past would recognize the campus of 1944, 45?
Not hardly. Engineering campus, engineering hall was there. Electrical engineering research lab to the north of that, and Talbot Lab, which is still there, was here. The present electrical engineering building was built after the war. The present, I guess it's metallurgy building on the corner of Green and Matthews, was the physics building at that time. The new ME building was built after the war. The new physics building, Loomis physics building, was built after the war. And except for Kenny Jim, there wasn't anything there wasn't anything north of Springfield. Kenny Jim is the only thing that was there, because the behind Kenny Jim was a railroad a running track, because that's originally, before Memorial Stadium was built, that was where the football games were played. And north of that was the baseball diamond, where Beckman Institute is at the present time, was the baseball diamond. And that was it. I mean, then south, the library was, well, I guess the Commerce Building was there, and the Ag Building, and of course the Armory.
And this was all before the military was integrated, too, correct?
Yes.
Were there any African-American units or other units on the U of I campus at all, or students or anything like that at that time?
I don't recall. I'm perfectly honest, I don't recall any African-American students during that year. I don't know when they started. Probably 19... I'm trying to think. I recall a grad student I know, not probably about 1949, a relatively small number.
But it was
quite a small number, I would
have
to say.
Unheard of before that on campus.
Very, very few African Americans on the campus.
Any last things that you may want to impart about your experience on the campus during
all I could say is that I think that I was very fortunate, because as I mentioned, my oldest brother had already been injured and was in the hospital. My second brother was in the Air Force and was in Africa. And then after we chased the Germans out of Africa, he was in Italy at an Air Force base. My third brother was in the combat engineers, and as the day I graduated from high school, unbeknownst to us, his unit was in the D-Day invasion on Omaha Beach. And so I figure that I was pretty fortunate. Of course, they were all fortunate. They all survived. The one in the infantry, as I mentioned, had been injured and spent some time in the hospital. But my brother in the Air Force survived without any difficulty. My brother, who was in D-Day, survived without any difficulty, except that they lost 3 or 4 years of their life. Whereas I was fortunate enough to spend 2 years in the Navy and complete 3 years of college education, because we went to school 12 months out of the year. We went to school 16 weeks, had a week off, 16 weeks, had a week off, 16 weeks, had a week off. How the faculty survived, I have no idea. And we were, because we were off on, we had no classes on the 4th of July or Thanksgiving or I suppose Memorial Day, but other than that, and of course, Christmas, Easter, which happened to be on a Sunday, so there were no classes on Sunday, but other than that, we had classes, they just went right straight through.
But it felt almost as much like a job as it did a
It was a job. It was a job. And so I have always, people say, well, you weren't really in the service. I say, well, I was and I wasn't. I was subject to Navy orders. I had to do what they told me to do, but I felt that I was very fortunate to be able to and to add to that, I guess for some people this would be, adding something to something. I was, despite the fact that I was in school for 2 years and completed 3 years of college, I got the GI Bill when they discharged me, so I got 2 more years of free education.
So it turned out well.
Can't beat that. Probably the most profitable military service that I can imagine. Okay.
We all set?
I think so.
I think that'll do it.
Very good. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for...